Welcome to episode number 70 of Up on Foil, which basically is up in the air right now. This episode, a very special one with Sam Koch. We are in the air. He's not only a foiler, he's a kite foiler, he's a para-winger, and he's a paraglider as well. And in this episode, we're going to talk para-wing, we're going to talk kite foiling, and he is developing kite bars and the high performance ones that are used at the Olympics. He has a specific kite foil bar system that we're going to get into, and he's also in the developing of para wings, and we're going to talk all about that. Stan, is there anything that you want to talk about right away at the beginning before we start the episode?
I think you mentioned almost everything. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate that you joined the ride here over my home in Interlaken. This is normally the activity I do when there is not a lot of wind. It's really, really cool. And at the same time now, really, really cold. I think it's not only that you're scared a little bit, it's only because it's quite cold, huh?
Yeah. Definitely, but it's amazing. We're gonna fly over harder here, like the mountain at Interlaken. There are other paragliders as well here. How often do you do this a year?
I do around 200 flights per year, and plus minus 100 airtime hours. Sometimes even before I work or after work, just to do a small workout, I do a hike 500 to 800 meters altitude and fly down. Sometimes I also camp out in the mountain and fly down before I go to work. But my main passion is still water sport, but the past 5-6 years I really felt in love with air sport, and it's a really nice combination between these two sports.
Let's do a little ad for Interlaken here, because it's a touristy place. You live here, you work here. Why Interlaken, man?
For me, to be based in Interlaken is just perfect, because I can do all the outdoor activities I enjoy, which is water sport on the two legs, and also mountain sports. It's just great place because you're just in between two lakes and surrounded by the Alps. I also do a lot of cycling, mountain biking. The lakes usually don't have a lot of wind, and it's quite difficult to go into the water. But this also, this I really like, because then we don't have a lot of other kiter and winger here, because it's not so easy to go out. And yeah, I really like the light, moderate, consistent wind. There is for sure other places which are better for kiting, but just the overall package Interlaken provides is something I really, really love.
All right, awesome. Let's prepare our landing. We're going to talk about what else to do here shortly with a warm coffee. All right, talk to you later.
This episode is sponsored by Foil Sessions, the foiling app that lets you track all your foiling sports.
This is Up on Foil, the podcast for everyone flying just above the surface. Pump, carb, soar, let's foil!
This episode is also supported by Surf Ears, but more on that later.
This was awesome, man. It was crazy. So we're back after that flight, after that tandem paragliding. Thank you very much. That was really amazing. And I'm still shaky a little bit, but let's try to take it from here.
This was maybe around the 100th tandem flight. Okay. Total solo flights included, maybe 700.
Oh, that's a lot. Yeah. That's a lot. So you're an experienced flyer. Well, maybe if you compare it to the pros here, maybe not as much, but still, I felt super comfortable. How was it with me? Was I okay? Was I doing all right?
No, when I told you 2 days ago that we can do a tandem flight and I offered that to you, I felt already a bit that you not scared, but a bit nervous.
No, I was scared. You can say I was scared.
You were scared. And I think as a tandem pilot, it's really important to give confidence, to also show the passenger that you professional with this activity. And that was always my main focus. And I know that it's a safe activity when we do it in a really calm environment, which we did today.
Weather was good. Wind was good.
It was only a little bit too cold.
Well, I was fine. Less people maybe in the air because of that.
Yeah, it's also under the week. It's not weekend. It's in the morning. It's cold. I think that's one of the reasons. But we also saw some professional commercial tandem pilots. Yes. And in the end, yeah, I'm super happy that we also went to another launching spot, which was not crowded at all. We were alone. We also saw a deer. And this is something which is really pursued my lifestyle also, is like combine sport with nature, with adventure. And this I could just show you before this podcast. This was important for me. So we can also talk a little bit about this. And you also met me a little bit from another
perspective. Side. Yeah, sure. And maybe if we like take this paragliding sport, and we're going to talk about all the sports you do, because you started very young, was on the water since you were a little kid. When did you start like paragliding and why?
I started paragliding 5 or 6 years ago, just after COVID, because I was not able to travel and it was in winter and there was not a lot of things to do. So I decided to go to Interlaken to do my first tandem course, paragliding course. And from then on, I was hooked and just that was everything I want to do beside the water sport. Yeah.
Very nice. All right, let's talk water sports or sports in general, because when I looked around here in your office, I saw a bike, I saw hiking boots next to all the water sports gear. You've always done a lot of sports. How did that start? Maybe you can like just show us or tell the listeners what sports you did growing up, what sports you do now, and how that affected your life and maybe your business life as well.
Yeah, probably I should start with my childhood when I was, or like let's say 40 years ago, when I was not on Earth yet. My dad was in the south of France and founded a windsurf school. When I was 2 weeks old, that was the first time I went down there because my dad has to work and my mom looked after me and we were on the camping. And I grew up with a windsurfer around me and it was always something in me, which I saw, I experienced. But I couldn't start windsurfing when I was 2 weeks old. So when we went back to South of France 2-3 times every year, when I was maybe 6-7 years old, instead of finding a babysitter for me, my dad brought me in his own windsurfing school and and just left me there. And so I was not my own decision to start windsurfing. It was more like the chance of my parents.
You were just there and there were windsurfers around. So what else are you going to do?
But I got an understanding of the sport, early water sport, wind sport, really early. But it was not really something I want to do. And also when we went back to Switzerland, I could not really do windsurfing there because I grew up in the north of Switzerland where we're not a windy lakes. So yeah, the easiest thing to get rid of my energy, which I have a lot, was to go something accessible, which was football back then.
Classic.
And yeah, I was just hooked to be good in something and just want to work on myself and be better and get better. So I really put a lot of effort and time into football. And I was kind of semi-professional until 16 years old.
Okay.
But because I did it so much and it always depending on other people, you need to go to the training and maybe one day you're not really keen to do some sport and you have to do it. And other days you really motivated to sport, but you don't have any training then. So it At this time, I was training five times and had one or two games every week. And it was just a kind of a small burnout. I was not really enjoying football anymore.
What team were you playing?
It was FC Baden.
What position?
And, I was goalkeeper. And okay. I only 170. Yeah. I'm only 170. Yeah, everybody told me I'm too small. Basically, I'm too small for this position. But I trained a lot on like jumping skills, so I can jump really wide and high. But the reason also is why I didn't stop soccer maybe with 12, 13 is because I always wanted to kitesurf. But my dad never wanted me to do this. Because
so just for my understanding, when you had vacation during that time, like at school, 8, 10, 12, in every vacation you went to south of France?
Not every, but maybe 2 or 3 weeks per year.
Okay, so and you're always there at the surfing station, water sports around you. All right.
But then we were like mountain biking and playing football on the camping. And yeah, for us, it's, I think it's a little bit normal if you grow up in a surrounding like this, and it's just normal for you, so you don't really want to do it. Mm-hmm. And I never had really the ambitions to just do more windsurfing. I did it from time to time, but only when the conditions were really good wind, just perfect, no waves. Then I did it for 1 hour, but that was maybe one or two times per week, yeah.
All right, so you were there a couple of weeks a year, saw the windsurfers, but didn't like it too much. You always wanted to kite. Why?
Yeah, and I also saw a lot of kiters next to the windsurf, and I always want to do that because it looks so much more dynamic. You can jump high. It looks a little bit more, adrenaline sport, I would say, not extreme.
It kind of looks extreme, or it can be extreme, especially if you look back a couple of years.
I don't know if it's extreme. It was just not safe back then. For me, extreme is not only when it's not safe, it's more if it looks more radical, like higher, just more faster. Faster. This is for me more like an extreme sport. Doesn't really mean necessarily that it's dangerous.
Did you know that spending time in cold water and wind can cause your ears to slowly grow extra bone, sometimes enough to block them completely? It's called surfer's ear or exostosis, and it's part of your body's natural protective response. But ear problems aren't only about cold. Warm or polluted water can also lead to swimmer's ear, infection and inflammation, whether in pools, lakes, or the ocean. Surfears is the original patented earplug from Sweden. It's modular, customizable, and comfortable, designed to seal from water while keeping hearing and balance intact. Sustainably made and trusted by water people worldwide.
So I really want to start kitesurfing and ask my dad a couple of times, and he always told me, no, it's too dangerous.
Were people able to kitesurf at his surf school, or was it just windsurfing at his place?
They tried. They went out with boat with these really old kites, two-liner kites, and they were basically not able to go upwind. They were just dragged down. They went in onshore wind out with the boat 2-3 kilometers and just jumped in, and they just did body drag, and maybe they could ride a few meters on the board.
Okay.
They also, when they come back, they told me, it was not really worthy. But I always stick to the plan that I
want. You still wanted to do it, even though, okay.
But then I forgot it maybe a year or so, because we went back home and I did some other sports. Besides football, I also did a lot of running and mountain biking. Yeah. But one day, I think it was during the apprenticeship.
Yeah.
I told my dad, can I please start now? And then he said, okay, I think now it's the time. Maybe it was like, 3-4 years after I asked the last time.
Yeah. You were 16, 17?
No, I was 18 or 19 then.
Okay.
Yeah. So quite late. But then we booked a flight to Egypt and we went there for 10 days, I guess. And after maybe 2-3 hours, I could already ride, and I was really hooked. And I think after the fifth or sixth day, I already told my dad he should order a kite quiver for me.
Very nice. All right, we're going to go into your kiting because that's basically a huge part of your life still. Just to understand you a little bit better, what apprenticeship do you do?
I did an apprenticeship as an industrial mechanic.
Okay.
In Germany, it calls polymechanic.
Yeah. So a lot of different materials, a lot of different tools.
Especially metal and plastic, and then machining with like milling, drilling, welding, grinding, all this.
CAD also included?
CAD included, but only beside that's another job, but we have some lessons in this.
Basic understanding in that, because it's probably going to come in handy later on if you talk about what's in our background, right? So you're kiting. You said you learned it quickly. You probably enjoyed it as well. How did that progress? Where did it went? Where did it go?
Yeah. After this vacation, after I started kiting, I knew that I just want to spend all my holidays with kiting.
Yeah.
So even if it was apprenticeship, I was not allowed to do more than 8 hours a day of working. But I did every day 1 hour more. I went half an hour earlier to work and did only half an hour of lunch break. So end of the year, I had quite a lot of hours.
Overtime,
yeah. Yes. And then I could just do like 5-6 weeks of summer vacation compared to like 5-6 weeks of year long.
Yeah. All right. Very nice.
So I was really hooked. And I think the first year I was also pushing a lot. I went through all the magazine, a lot of videos, everything.
But were you like twin tipping or did you do everything?
Only twin tipping. Back then it wasn't, foiling was not known.
No, but maybe like on a surfboard, like a unidirectional?
Yes, like after 1.5 year pushing, I went a little bit too crazy on a jump with a kite loop and I twisted my knee and snapped my ACL.
Okay.
And I was out for 6 months and this was really, really tough for me, especially as a guy who needs a lot of movement.
Yeah, get that.
Need to get rid of the energy. It was a big learning for me. I learned a lot to look after my body and that health is the most important thing. After that injury, I went fully strapless, only surfboard. And my goal was to do all the tricks I did with the twin dip on a surfboard strapless. The first few months, I could learn some tricks. Yeah. Which I did on the twin tip, but then
like what?
Yeah, like Jesus walks, jumps, nice. And flips, stuff like this.
Wow!
And this time I also did my kitesurf instructor course license. But then the foiling came up, and I put everything away and only want to do foiling or at least start foiling. But the problem back then was that it was not available at all.
When was that?
As in 14, 15.
Okay.
Something like this.
10 years ago, huh?
Yeah. And I tried to order some foils. And back then it was only race foils on the market. And
super difficult, I suppose.
Difficult to source, yeah.
Yeah.
I couldn't get one. I asked 2 or 3 suppliers. But when you're not known in the racing community, you have no chance.
All right.
So I was building my own one.
Nice.
I put a lot of effort, a lot of energy.
Like into the whole carbon thing or how you...
Yeah, I just use wood, shape the profile, and then I laminated with carbon and glass fiber.
Yeah.
Because I knew how to use epoxy resin and glass fiber from...
Due to your apprenticeship?
No, because I was also repairing... surfboards my dad to get some pocket money.
Ah, nice.
So I knew a little bit how to deal with this material. So I did my own foil and I tried it out behind the boat, but it was too wobbly, not stiff enough. And it was a good learning. And I think after maybe 1 year of just try to source a foil, Liquid Force came out with the first serial product.
Yeah.
And I just ordered that one. And when I received it, I went straight, booked a flight to Cabo Verde.
Yeah.
And there I learned it. Yeah.
how different, because I remember when I was kiting and then I went on foil for the first time and I went kite foiling for the first time, it was pretty difficult for me to understand. I don't have to edge that much, but like stay on top more. It took me a few sessions to understand that. And my sessions were like scattered over the year, maybe three sessions, or I needed four sessions, but it was almost a year that it took me to learn four sessions. So I didn't have much time to actually try it out, but it took a while. I remember it was not as easy as I thought it'd be.
For me, it was not the first session, but I think on the second session, I could already go upwind and do some tours, which I never could do before with twin tip.
Nice.
And I think the benefit there was that I also had experience with race sports, three fin race sports in kite racing, okay, which I did before, because there you don't really edge. You ride everything with the fin. And I think also in this year when I tried to source a foil,
yeah,
I went through so many videos, so many blog posts
okay,
to understand what other people did, what kind of mistakes. And so I already had a lot of knowledge, but never owned the foil before.
Yeah. And, okay. All right. Yeah. A lot of research. Who were your like idols when you looked at videos at people who knew how to do it?
I think first thing which comes up now when I think in this time was Johnny Heineken.
Yeah.
When he was like foiling the tacks and the chipes in the harbor of San Francisco.
Yeah.
I think mainly chibing. And one day I saw Peter Müller doing this tack fully on foils, and I could never ever imagine that it's physically possible to go upwind tack on foil without doing any touch. So this inspired me a lot, but it took me maybe 2 or 3 years to really do good tacks. And I think it's also because the foils were quite difficult back then. The race foils were quite difficult. And I was always using LEI kites, tube kites, which you don't have a lot of lift and performance. So I think these days with this super user-friendly foil kites and big accessible foils, you do so much more progress. I think the first 2 years I started foiling, I learned to ride in really, really light wind and go as much upwind and downwind as possible.
Yeah.
But was not really capable of doing any maneuvers.
All right. But like you had to learn the hard way as the gear was not as good as it is now. With that, with those learnings, as you have the good thing, it is easy for you. Or you were able to adapt to the newer gear quickly, or was it like a slow progression in gear and you just had always the newer stuff and it was not a difference because the changes were marginal?
There was not one product which changed everything. I think because I was involved in the really early days with the first foils, I changed to new foils and the next version and the latest version. I felt that there was just a slight progression on every version. But there was not a game changer product which make everything from one day to the other super easy.
But like tube kites to
foil kites.
Yes. That must have been a big change, or not?
First, I was for sure I could foil earlier, but I was also afraid to drop them in the water. So I didn't risk
riding
too much.
Scared is difficult, yeah.
And also sometimes I have quite a lot of power in the loop, the chipe. And I think I was just, my main mistake was just to use only like high performance race foils before I could do the maneuvers.
Okay. Did you said before that with the three fins, you did some racing as well. What kind of racing did you do? How good were you? Where do you travel to do these races?
It was only national events,
mainly
in Lake Sivaplana, for sure, annually, this marathon I did. But yeah, I was in apprenticeship. I had like a few
little
weeks,
time, little money, and
there was already people in my age or even younger, especially the Bridge family.
Yeah,
Ollie Bridge, Guy Bridge. They was just smashing it. They only did that.
Yeah,
and
have you ever met them?
Yeah,
You raced against him, maybe in Sur Plan or Champagne?
Yeah, I raced against them. And later I raced against them with foils. And I also did a little bit of products for them.
Very nice. That was a perfect segue, man. Let's go into your professional life, because you said that you did products for them. We are in your workshop right now. We have some amazing stuff behind us, in front of us, that we're going to talk about. And when I look at my kiting, I was kind of the opposite of you, because I was windsurfing and I always look at the kiters like, I don't want to kite. I don't want to kite. And then eventually I was in Fuerteventura once on vacation. I was like, you know, maybe I should just give it a go. And then I did the class and I actually enjoyed it. I'm still not super comfortable with the long lines, especially like landing and starting. Yes, I always need someone to help me, and it's just sometimes not that comfortable, or you need someone else. So I brought with me one of my old kite bars. So those on audio, this is a Cabrinha bar. You maybe know it from when it is. It's probably 15 years ago, something like that. It is quite heavy. It is plastic, but it works, I would say. But you do your own bars. When you look at a bar like that, what goes through your mind?
When I look to this, I think this was produced before I started kiting. I think it was maybe 2005, 2006 or something like this. And if I look to a bar like this, just from the materials, I think it didn't change a lot to like the commercial bar we have now on the market.
Yeah.
But just few things. When I start with the center hole in the middle, it's just a straight hole, which, you can improve a lot by just making different shapes. So the steering is easier. There's less
drag.
Friction.
Oh, friction, yeah.
Exactly. The angle is easier. That's just one point. And it's not super, super heavy. I think it's hollow. But for me, it was also important that something is necessary, which is light, and also something which you have a good feedback of the kite.
Yeah.
Here we have some padding, which is also good for a grip, but it also damped the feedback of the kite.
All right.
So for me, sometimes less is more.
All right. Then let's put that away and let's get into your business side. And maybe you can just tell the audience, how is that split up? Because you don't do just one thing. You, as far as I know, have your own bar and release system, safety release system. You work for Fly Surfer as well. You have your own brand here. You have these socks, super cool. I got one already, it's super nice. So maybe you can just tell the audience, how is your business life like split up? How does that work?
Maybe should I start how everything started?
Sure.
Good.
Sure.
So when I started racing, hydrofoil racing, I saw that some people were building their own bars. And back then I was in my study, like in the first or second term. And just beside going to some lessons, I researched and tried to draw my first 3D models on CAD.
Yeah, but why did you think it was important to have another bar? Do you think that was not good enough?
Okay, first of all, I think it's very important that you have a big range in depowering.
Okay, yeah.
And if you want to have a big range, you need a big throw to change the angle of attack of the kite. Especially for me as a small person, it's quite hard to push the bar as far. You can extend the throw by 10, 15, 20 centimeters, but then I cannot.
You cannot reach it.
First, I cannot fully depower. Yeah. And if I let it go by then accident, then I cannot reach it again. So for me, the main goal was to bring the whole system closer to your body, and also to optimize the trim system, makes it like more sleek, less friction, better ratio between like pulling to trim the front lines.
Okay, yeah. Okay, I start to, because I remember I have this, it's like engraved in my brain. that I had so much power, I couldn't just release it. I had to push the bar in order to have a little less power in the kite. That's what
and
I remember.
And that's also a big problem these days. A lot of family members, I would say, are like just parents. They say that, the bar for my son or my daughter is just a too long throw, the power travel, that they cannot reach the bar. And then they say, can you make this shorter? And then I say, no, we don't make this shorter because this is even more dangerous because you cannot
depower. Makes sense.
So for me, it was always important to bring the system closer to you and just organize everything more and
compact,
more compact and also bring a little bit of handcraft and engineering into this product, but also keep it simple, minimalist, but
so it doesn't break.
Yeah.
All right, premium. All right, that's good. Was that the first thing that got you into your own company?
It was not a company. That it was just like doing...
You wanted to do it for yourself, basically.
Yeah, I just need a project. And I did the first bar for myself. And then I went probably to the first competition. And some guy saw it and they want to buy it. And I only had one.
You can have it after the event.
Oh, after the event or maybe a few weeks later, I sold it. And with this income, I could... do a couple of them, like two or three. And back then I knew my budget was really small. It was like 200 or 300 Swiss francs, which is like plus minus the same in euro. And I just invested that in carbon tubes and some blocks and some cleats and some kite lines. And yeah, it's quite expensive. So 200, 300 euro is quickly gone. So I sold that, then I could build two, and my entire business is based on this small investment in the beginning.
And it was just because you brought your bar to that event, basically.
Yeah, and they saw it. I think it's always in racing, when sport racing, they always want to see what's the latest technology. And if they have a small gain, everybody want to buy it.
All right.
So then I had quite a lot of demand, but I was still studying.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what to do. Sometimes I skip classes and have to go back home because a parcel came and I had to get the parcel with new carbon sticks in. But I pursued this philosophy that when I start something, I want to finish something.
Yeah. Okay.
And that was also with my study. And after 3 years...
What did you study?
I studied energy and environment engineering.
Yeah.
And also a bit of mechanical engineering, especially into like plastics and composite.
Uh-huh. Very nice.
And in the end, after I finished my education as an engineer, I could start somewhere and have a good salary, but I straight put all the time, all the risk into my own business.
Very nice.
And I founded my company, I think in the second or third term, because I thought when I sell something, I want to do it legally.
Yeah.
And I also, both my parents are self-employed, and that was always something I want to do by myself. Yeah.
All right. Very nice. When you say quite high demand, do you remember the numbers? Because
numbers not exactly,
but it was like probably more than 3, 5, 10. But how many racers are there
for
really?
Sure, it was so much demand that I felt under pressure. I have people, they want my stuff. I really want to provide them with my stuff, but I cannot do it because I don't have the time for it. I think it was, I had a waiting list and there was like 30 40 bars. And sometimes they had to wait 3 or 4 months.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. So like the bar, is that's what got you started. Can you maybe show us the special thing about that bar?
I have the first, very, very first bar here.
Oh, nice. In a museum here.
It looks a little bit funny now, but it was really my first project. It's just like quite thick diameter carbon stick with a already shaped center hole.
Yeah.
But the winders to wind up the lines and where the leader lines are attached are way, way too bulky. But it's sometimes I feel a bit...
Was that 3D printed?
That was 3D printed, right. And
so that was the first part. Did you have to buy it back afterwards or how do you get that?
No, it was a prototype. I went out with this bar by myself 2 sessions and never again. So I put it by side, and when I just organized my workshop recently, I found this and said, okay, now it's just something which I can show to somebody, but I'm not really proud of it. Sometimes it's a little bit funny when I look to it. Yeah. But yeah, everybody starts small, I would say.
Yeah, you have to. So how does the bar look now?
Okay. You hold that.
Thank you. Oh yeah, that's lighter. Actually, it's not that much lighter, but it's a little bigger. You have it's longer, so you probably have a better way to steer. The hole is bigger, and yes, it's shaped, right?
Maybe we also need to not only show, also explain a bit more for
the listeners. Yes, for the audio listeners, sure.
So from a basic carbon tube with some 3D printed heavy bulky winders, I optimized it and went maybe through 50 versions, and these days I have three different models. I have the Beyond Bar, the Prime Bar, and the Unique Bar. The Unique Bar is basically my original version, where you just have carbon stick with small carbon tubes at the end, a symmetrical and tube with no padding, no grip at all, which you don't really need, because I think that just influences your feedback.
Yeah.
If you have too much padding, too much foam on it, it just damped everything out. And then I have the Beyond Bar, which is...
It's super slim, huh?
This one is the slim version, which I didn't release yet, which I will bring out in spring, but it's good also to... talk about it here. I think it's not a big secret, because some races use it already for 1 year, which I do a long-term test, like I do everything all time with my products. It's super slim, and the main point is that the centerpiece is made out of titanium and it's polished. The main problem which I have with all bar manufacturers is durability of the center line, the depower line, which goes through the bar, because there's a lot of friction. Steering, depower, powering all the time. You have a lot of wear and tear on this part. So you want to reduce the friction to the minimum, to the maximum or minimum, how you see it. And that's why I choose metal, and really hard metal, and something which cannot oxidize. And this is titanium, and at the same time, it's also quite light.
All right, can I see? Because if I've never used a race kite, probably better. Back in the day when I kited, I had this thick plastic thing going through. Yeah. For a race kite, what actually comes through here? Is it just Dyneema together?
Or? The core material is always Dyneema most of the time. And if I always say, if you don't really find the solution, you just put a plastic tube around because there's just... not a lot of wear on this part, and then you just have the plastic, but it's really sticky and it's stiff. That's why I like a Dyneema line, which is quite flexible, and then I cover it with a Dyneema sleeve.
Okay, all right, good. All right, makes a lot of sense, because Dyneema over here, I can see how it goes through really smoothly.
I can also show.
This is really nice for all the audio listeners. I don't know how heavy it is, but it's really
200 grams.
Wow.
Depends a little bit on the size. This is the Beyond Bar Pro. It's also, the bar ends are made of carbon fiber. And for me also, you see it already here. There's some details that I really want to make everything fits perfectly.
Yeah.
It's flush with a ring. And
So you could exchange those as well?
You could.
Yeah.
That was the purpose of that.
Yeah.
But experience showed me that it's not really necessary to.
It's also titanium?
This is stainless steel.
All right, stainless steel.
Yeah.
Very nice. All right, super cool. And people can order it in spring on your website.
If they send me an email now, I can also provide them now.
All right. Gonna put every contact information in the show notes. This is a Beyond.
Beyond, yes, with the titanium center. And then I have the ultra light version bar, which is the Prime Bar, which also have a little bit ergonomic centerpiece, which has a replaceable insert. This, it's really personal preference. Some guys, they really tiny slim diameter, some like a little bit thicker, some like also wider bar, and it's really personal preference. And I also write every detail on the homepage, where you find which bar fits you the best.
Why is it replaceable?
In the beginning, I thought there is wear and tear on the D-Power line. There should also be some wear on the insert.
Yeah.
But after a few years, I just found out that it's not really, you don't need to replace it.
Okay.
Because there was no wear. But it's good. I anyway need something with metal and plastic into this bar because the entire bar is full carbon. So I anyway need to screw something in or mount something in. So yeah, in the end, if it's not replaceable.
Oh, wow, yeah, that looks, that is even, it feels super light. Maybe because it's bigger as well. How heavy is this?
Light? Maybe 180.
That's amazing.
And this is a lot of handwork.
Yeah. Like what do you actually have to do to get a bar like this?
That's a good question. Like the very, very early bars I produced, I just ordered some carbon tubes. And then I glue in the 3D printed parts, which I never do again because it's just like, for me, 3D printing, it's good for prototyping.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's for me not something which lasts long.
Yeah.
And I had to sand a lot. I had to laminate a lot. And now, these days, I have some suppliers. They mold the bars for me.
Yeah.
But only the parts. They send it to me out of the mold. And then I glue them together. I fill the imperfection with some resin and carbon fiber powder. And I
send... Do that here?
Yeah, I glue them together here. I sand it. And also here, it needs a lot of varnish job. You need two or three layers, depending a little bit on the model. But this, I have the opportunity. I'm really grateful for that, that I can use the varnish room from Riftport, from Simon. Maybe once a year, I hook up with him and say, yeah, can I come to you? And I need to varnish some bars. And because for me, it doesn't really make sense to just have one room, which I use 1 week.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. What is that bar called?
The Prime.
The Prime. Is that your biggest bar?
Widest, yeah. It's 65.
Why would one use like a wider bar? Is it to just like steer more?
No, when you just if you imagine, if you tilt the bar by, let's say, if 10 degrees, the difference between left and right input is bigger if you have a wider bar.
Yeah.
And a bigger kite needs more input than a smaller one.
Yeah.
And some rider, they prefer to give more input and some they want to have less input. And sometimes when it's too small, it starts to get nervous. The main difference, I would say, between the width of the bar is that just the difference between the left and the right steering line change more or less with a certain degrees of steering angle.
All right. If someone were to say, I need an even bigger bar, would you do that?
I could do, yeah.
So you have a lot of custom orders?
Most of the time I have my bars from 50 centimeter to 65 within 5 centimeter steps.
Yep.
If you want to have 53, I think you don't really feel exactly the difference.
Okay. But people might still want that, right?
Yes. I had some customers, especially in racing, they want to be super accurate and they tested that and they won't say, maybe a tiny bit more, and then say 1 or 2 centimeter more.
All right. So you also talked about the third bar.
Yeah. This here. It's the Unique bar. That's the original design, which looks super simple, which is also super simple. And I still have a lot of customers, they want that because they just like the simplicity.
Yeah.
You need to keep in mind that not only racer buys my bar. Also some free rider, which like hand manufactured, high-end customized products. I really compare it to like a racing car. If you have a racing car and then you have a steering wheel, which is like a square steering handle, you cannot really get the performance out of this racing car.
Yeah.
That's the same with a bar. if you have something bulky and not really precise and not organized, not sleek bar system, you cannot really be the kite cannot be an extension of you.
Okay. All right. It's your connection to the kite, basically. Yeah. All right.
And the other thing is, there are a lot of, I compared also a little bit with the cycling industry. There are so many small brands. They do just like accessory.
Yeah.
Like small parts, like a bottle cage or like traveling bags or something like this. They can live only from this product. Yeah. And in kiting, most of the kiters, they have the money to invest in new kites, in new foils, in the latest foil, but they never think or hardly never think about the latest bar or how do I get the best connection between myself and the
kite. Can I see this one as well? This one is a straight tube.
Yes.
Right? And then we have other little tubes at the end where the lines are connected. Mm-hmm. Then we have these holes here. What are those for?
I put some bunches there. So when you end up the lines, you can
them. All right. Makes all sense. This is really...
It looks really so basic. Simple.
Yeah.
But it's all what counts, no?
Yeah. Also pretty light, huh? Mm-hmm. Super nice. Which part do you use?
Everything. I really have... At the moment, I really like the slim bars because I'm used to it and I have small hands. And I always want to make a small diameter, but for me, the longevity and durability is super important.
Yeah.
That's why I also run a lot of tests. As you see there, the test bench where I measure some loads. Yeah. For me, it's not only aesthetics and performance. For me, it's also that if you have a failure in product, it could firstly be really dangerous.
Yeah, sure.
And also when you're in a race and you break the bar.
And you don't go to the Olympics because of that.
Yeah. And you maybe miss a few races, but if you just lose one or two places because the performance is not the best, then it's better, I would say.
All right.
Okay. These are my bar stick. This is basically why people know me because of the bars. But for me, the thing which makes even the bigger difference is the rigging, the lines. Like this, you can even customize more.
Yeah.
And then also the release system, which I would say was always my philosophy to bring the system, the whole bar system, closer to you.
All right. Yeah. So your release system is smaller, is more compact. Maybe we can show it here as well.
Yeah.
I saw some things on the back. Do like juniors use that or do why doesn't everyone use that?
Okay. I think not every, you can also see how it spins.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. It was not my initial idea to bring the whole system closer to myself.
Yeah.
It was also from big brands. They just made the loop of the release system smaller. But in racing, it's really important. So they start to use different carabiners, shackles, which you also use in the sailing world. So they start to use this Wishart shackle, which is same size as this, maybe a little bit bigger.
Like the one I saw hanging over there, these ones.
Yes.
Yeah. Where you can just like pull a little
thing. See it on the test bench,
Yeah.
But the problem there is there are different versions. Some, they don't really release under load, even if it's 10 or 15 kilo load.
Yeah.
And in an emergency situation, we have
want it to release 100%.
Yeah, we have loads over 100 kilo.
Yeah.
And the other version, they release under load, but there is a small release travel, which means even if you pull 2 or 3 millimeters, it can already release.
Okay.
So you can have accidental release, which is also
not good. Also not too good, yeah.
And I think the kiting industry is quite innovative, but another side, they're also quite conservative.
Yeah.
When it comes to release system, they are really safe these days, but the whole concept, it's always the same.
Okay.
And it's mainly made, also the isonorm, it's made to hook in to a hook.
Yeah.
And the harness from kiting, most of the time they use a hook, which is, in my point of view, just adapted from windsurfing.
Yeah.
These days, I think there are a few percent who only do the unhook maneuvers or tricks.
Yeah.
And most of the riders, athletes, and
They can have fixed stuff. They don't need to release it. All right.
So I also think this needs to change a bit. And now with this release system, you have possibility to hook into everything. I have different adapter to connect it to.
Yeah. All right. So that's your number two, right?
Yeah.
You have the bars. That's number one. These go for what? Like $350, something like that?
It starts at 279 and it goes up to 450.
All right. How about those?
I have also three versions of that. The original one, and this is the Pro, which is all titanium. It starts at 179 and goes up to 299.
All right.
And yeah, I never had one which it's really long lasting. Yeah. If something breaks, which I hardly never have, you can replace it super easy.
Yeah.
So it's an investment.
All right.
Also the bar.
Yeah.
Which is something which you need to replace after a few time is the lines.
All right. Okay. You do lines as well?
I think the lines is my main job. Because maybe you see over there, there's a wall full of lines.
Yeah.
It starts at 0.8 millimeter and goes up to 5 millimeter diameter in different weavings and double sheeted and single braided lines.
Okay.
All from like sailing industry. My main partner there is Robline. And there we really closely work together with produce more kite specific products. And I only order this spool of lines. I go there, cut the lines, I splice, I cover, I sew them by myself. I don't order fixed lines.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of benefits. I think first, I don't need to have stock of every single line.
Yeah.
And then the second is that I can customize everything by myself and quite quickly.
All right.
If I have an express order, I can do it within maybe one day, really special, and they don't need to wait for the factory to produce them for me, ship it to me. And I think it's also more sustainable as a business point of view.
Yeah.
To produce your stuff by yourself.
And not those have lines, like a lot
even
on
if
stock.
They're one year here at the wall, they don't age because the temperature, the humidity here in this room is really well for this.
And it's the UV light that attack lines a lot, right? So here everything is fine. So all right, we have the bars, we have the releases, we have the lines. Is there anything else? What's your company called? Where can people find it on the internet?
It's SK Shapes. SK stands for my name, Stan Koish. Shapes. Mostly you also find it when you look up in a searching machine for carbon kite boss.
Yeah.
Everything is based in Switzerland. Everything is made by myself. I don't have any employees. I don't have any openings, but I'm available most of the time, even on weekend and holidays by email. So this is a service I really want to provide. And the reason is why I don't want to have openings and employees is I don't want to be dependent on customer and other people, because sometimes I need urgently test something.
Yeah.
So I drive somewhere, need to test it. And for me, it's good to have meetings when it's not really good for testing.
Yeah. You need to be like, you're wind dependable, you're weather dependable. Yeah. And so you can do whatever you just
And it doesn't make sense to have open times here because you don't walk just in as a tourist.
No tourist comes in. It's like, the release system. That could be nice for whatever, my dog. Yeah. All right. Okay. Do you have anything else on SK Shapes that you do? Because you have other involvements as well.
Exactly. Like SK Shapes is my company, and the only products I do there is, the main products I do there is kite bars. And it's just minimalist, performant, also premium and customizable kite bars.
Okay.
And yeah, I think my benefit is also that I'm kind of a perfectionist.
Yeah.
I really want to make something really performant, but also it needs to look well. And I run a lot of tests. I do a lot of I have two test bench, and I also test with electric devices on the water. I measure load. I want to understand the sport. I want to understand the forces which goes into this product. I just don't want to make a bar which is
like, it's probably good.
But you can also go to the other extreme. You just make it as durable as possible, but then it's heavy, bulky, and I just want to find the right mix. And also good is that like half of the world-class fleet is our friends of mine. Yeah. I go with them for some trips. I do vacation with them. When I on the World Cup, we hang out together. And the other hand, I try to support them with my time. They really appreciate the product, the service I provide. And I think that's something which is super important also for a sustainable business.
Makes a lot of sense. So if we talk about, or if you look over at the wall, the one that comes to mind, obviously, is Daniela Moraz's episode. I don't remember. She uses your bar. How many percent of riders at the Olympics use your bar? Do you know about that?
Normally, I don't do any statistics about this because this is not really something which is super important for me, the numbers. Yeah. But when I went to the games last year, I had to do a post before the games, and then I just looked up which athlete used my equipment, and then it was pretty much a little bit more over 50% of the athletes were using it. And in the end, which I'm quite proud of, was that the men's podium was all three were using my bar.
Nice.
And the women's were the silver medal.
So that was Daniela, huh?
No.
Oh, no.
No, it was Loriana.
It was not. All right. Difficult topic. When people go on the podium, they usually bring their foil or their board. Has any one of them gone up with your bar?
It happened already, but maybe only one or two.
All right.
I'm happy when they have this, when I support them and they appreciate my support. There's no athlete which I pay, or there's no athlete which I just give the product for free.
Yeah.
Most of the guys, they pay for them, or I borrow them when it's a prototype or so. And when they appreciate my service, which I give on the event side, they also want to give me something back by putting my sticker on the board. And when they on the podium with the board and my sticker, I'm really happy with that.
All right. Very nice. Plus, you support them with your time. But as I said, you're also involved with other things. Like, let's talk about Fly Surfer, because that's basically how we met, right? I was doing that Parawing review last summer and fall, and I used the POW, and it was super cool that I was able to use that. I really like that Parawing, super powerful. I love it. How did you get involved there? You said you don't Parawing that much. How did that happen?
Yeah, when I swapped from LEI tube kites to foil kites, I used a prototype from Peter Lin back then, which was in the beginning for me really well, really good, because I didn't know anything else. And it was really in the beginning of all this foil racing kites. It was a really, really good kite. The only thing I missed there a little bit was the range. So one day I tried out the VMG one from Fly Surfer, and I really liked it. And so I started buying these, and then Fly Surfer came up with like an already existing team rider. Went to them with my bar, and they were in the beginning not really happy because he is sponsored by Fly Surfer and not using their bars,
which
was not super good for them. And when I had a look on it, they say, maybe we need to make something like this as well. So they invite me to Germany. I went there, and they asked me if we can have any kind of cooperation, if I can make a bar for them. And back then I was still studying and I have no resources. Everything was built by myself. I cannot produce every bars for them. Was no chance at all. And I didn't have any supply chain which can produce my bar complete directly from the factory in their warehouse. But they really likes my work, and they start to I could start being ambassador in Switzerland for Fly Surfer. So we were always in contact, and we tried a couple of times to find a cooperation, but it was really hard because it's just a one-man show and a little bit of garage brand, I would say. Exactly. Then I came with Fly Surfer into contact, and one day they asked me if I know somebody in Switzerland who can be responsible for the Fly Surfer market. And I will think a little bit. And then I thought, maybe I can do that.
Yeah.
So after one or two meetings, I decided to be the sales manager for Switzerland, which is responsible for the shops and schools here. And then I really get closer and closer and more contact with them. And I thought, okay, now it's a time to find a good cooperation with bars. So I designed the new bar, which is possible to produce completely in a factory without a lot of like sanding, varnishing. It's more like an assembling.
Yeah.
And I set up the entire supply chain for them, and then I provide them the product. The
offer. Are those the bars you're talking about?
No, it's here. I provide the entire supply chain for them, and in the end, they said, "Okay, that's fine for us. If you organized everything already." Because that's mainly I think there's a lot of brands, they already want to do that.
Yeah.
But it's just the amount of bars you sell per year doesn't really worth the investment.
Okay.
Because you sell a few hundreds, and the commercial bar, they sell a few thousands.
Yeah.
And for me, it was just important that it's fine.
That's also yours, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe you need to lift a little higher. So for all the listeners,
it's a carbon bar,
yeah,
which has just, it's ideal for racing. We also brought out the freeride version of this 1 year later. And it's just my design and all my experience with the trim system went into this design, where I just put all the average settings from all the athletes together. So it fits everybody. But some not perfectly. Then we still have my custom bars.
Yeah.
It's not a custom bar, but it's something really different to all the commercial bars.
Yeah.
And it's also good for a brand to have something premium in their lineup.
It looks premium, yeah.
And
that's the release system is a little bit bigger than...
Yeah, that's the original one. I still have this.
Okay, yeah.
This is just like the pro version, and this is the original version.
Yeah.
It's really depend.
It's just a size, isn't it?
Yeah, and also a little bit the manufacturing and the technology. And the
titanium here is plastic, or
it's like a watch. Sometimes happy when there is the number on it, and if you want to have it, some really nice, like machined part, you prefer this.
That fidget spinner back, it's super cool to talk.
And for me, personally, also an achievement as a product developer to. Design a product for a well-established brand, and it was a chance to do it, and I was super happy that this deal that we could do this deal.
All right.
And the good thing then, they saw how I work, and they asked me if I also have time in the future to help them with the development of their freeride bars. And from day one, I said, okay, that's exactly what I want to do.
Nice.
Because first of all, I really like the brand. I really like the company because it's based in South Germany, and just the philosophy and also the mentality of the people, the German people living in the South are very similar to the Swiss.
Yeah.
And everything was just...
You're vibing
up.
With
it's
them, huh?
Just super good, cool.
All right.
And what I miss really... is to work in a team and don't work alone anymore. And there's so much experience in this company, which I can learn a lot. And I miss that after 6-7 years doing only my business, that I can exchange with some experienced people to learn from, and also don't work entirely for myself.
All right.
And here we go. So
That's what you said. Huh? That's the mantle.
Yeah, the sleeve.
Cover the sleeve. Yeah. Very nice.
I compared, there are some brands, they use the NEMA line for the D-Power throw, but the friction is directly on the core.
Yeah,
so
you don't want
that. I compare it a little bit with a tree. Mm-hmm. A tree have a core, and then also...
The bark.
Bark, or just the cover around, and the cover just protects the tree.
Mm-hmm.
And once the cover is broken, you know you need to replace the line.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, the whole braking strength of the line will decrease. In this kind of method, you always have the same braking strength. Right. And this is where all the load is attached to.
All right, super cool. This was like super nice, this exposure on the bars on the release system. Honestly, I don't kite anymore. Maybe I should go back kiting one day. What I usually do now is parawinging. And in that bar, you worked there as well, right? You had some involvement as well. And the Fly Surfer bar is pretty different to all the other bars. Maybe I can just like take it over here. Because what I really like about that bar is the angle that it has at the front. So you can actually hold it with two hands if necessary. It still fits my Elements pouch. This bar still fits. So that's super cool. What was your job on that? Yeah. How do you like it?
It was not, I was not only responsible for that bar. It was like two or three designers involved. And they also asked me for like brainstorming to also give my comments to it because I was experienced with the lines and injection molding. And it's always good if designers hook up and then just brainstorm together, because my philosophy is that, or my point of view is that when one designer think about a solution for 1 hour, or 2 hours, you can find a solution for a problem. But when you have just two or three person for 10, 15 minutes, sometimes you're even more efficient.
Okay.
And something you just in your own bubble and you think on one small detail and you don't think out of the box. So it was also important that we talk together about a few problems and some difficulties we had. Here, the concept was not for me with the L shape, but I was a little bit, for me, was my part was more to the practical part, how to replace the lines quickly, which line we should use, how we should do the connection.
Was the pulley system your idea?
Pulley system was already existing, but just the way how we connect it, what line we take here, just this part, which in the end makes for me organized sleek bar. You can have a lot of solution. I think just to find a solution, it's not really difficult, but for me it's difficult to find the sleek and also user-friendly option.
All right, you don't parawing that much though, you said, is it because the place here is not super windy? Or do you have enough on your plate with everything else?
Last year, exactly 1 year ago, we had a meeting with Fly Surfer in Egypt when we tested the POW the first time, before it came out. So I really want to try it out because I think, okay, that should be the future. Unfortunately, back then we only had like small boards and not really efficient foil, but the wind was quite strong. So with a 2.5, I was struggling a bit, but then I could foil. But only one side, the other side I was struggling. And after a while, I recognized that I need to swap arms. I was always using one arm. It was not intuitive for me then. Since then, I tried once or twice. And for me, it was just really like the philosophy of this sport, that just the minimalism of everything. You can package really small. You can do adventure tours. It just in the element with not something which annoys you. So I really like it. But for me, the main problem was yet that I never want to use a really big board. But I think this is not an excuse anymore. And also, I don't have really access to a really good spot, which I just can jump out. This point of view.
You're spoiled here. Like going 10 minutes by bike and you're out there. That's super cool.
For parawinging, we need storm.
You need storm, or you need to go for 1.5-2 hours to get to a super spot. So that's,
So I think it's still on my bucket list. I really want to do it, not only because we sell it, also because I think I really like it. And also with my partners, Levitas, they're working on a really new promising foil lineup where they have a suitable foil for downwinding.
Yeah.
And I think latest then I need to do it. Then I don't have any excuse. I need to find the board.
All right.
Maybe a little bit more wind in the smaller board. And
you know, you can use my board if you want.
Really?
Yeah, always. Yeah, sure. Good. So the POW has been out for a while now. I don't know if you can share anything because everyone is always working on their next version. Do you have any news that you can share?
I'm not directly involved in the development process, but I hear sometimes from them, and I also was working on the lines for the new handle. So I think there's just a trend who's going either into like more stashing and pack away.
Yeah.
So it needs to be small in packing and also short lines.
Yeah.
But I think also the reason why we did the POW like this was to have performance. You could feel that it was very powerful.
Yeah.
It went upwind really well, and with long lines, this is better to achieve. The new version, I know that the lines will be shorter.
Yeah,
there will be different line colors, and the bar will also be a little bit shorter. I think that's not a secret. A lot of manufacturers go in this direction, and I think also that it will be a second pairing coming out a little bit later after spring.
I'm excited for that because I really like the POW, the form. It stays super nice. The small one, when I used it last time, it was quite nervous, but that's also because there was 35 knots. I then used like a lower aspect parawing, even smaller one, was easier to use. So I still think the POWs are not your entry or your entrance to parawinging. Because they're more difficult than others, but once that I got it, that like the 5 meter, I had to break it before chibing. It's just a little technique, but I really like them. I thought the POW stands for powerful, but yeah, they're super cool. And also with the bar, if you're overpowered or well powered, the bar is super comfortable. Yeah. And I just put the harness here at the edge, so it was even easier on my arms.
How comfortable did you like the L shape?
The L shape, I really like it. And as I just said before, like it's easy. I could stash that thing, which first I thought it wouldn't fit. Mm-hmm. But as soon as it fits, it doesn't matter. Bigger is better as long as you can stash it.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe another pouch is different. But for me, yeah, it's really comfortable.
I think if you can achieve like a smaller handle, which is same feedback, it's even better, no?
Yes, it is. There is too small, though, I would say. Like the BRM bars are like 25 centimeters. For me, it's just a little too small. Even because sometimes I like to hold it with both arms, sometimes not. 777, I think, does a really good job because they don't have like the B lines here. They have everything just in the front and the back, which is super comfortable. You can move the hands wherever you think is best. So I really like it. But I'm excited for the new Parawings. Really, I take the 2.5 out just as a backup if the wind gets too strong, the same way that I have a 5 meter or even a bigger one, just if the wind dropped that I can still get.
How does your quiver look like now?
Now I have, well, I still have, for all the listeners to view who are still here over an hour, which is probably no one, but if you want a double skin Bahia from BRM, please get it because I still have that in my quiver, but I don't use it. I don't want to use it. It's too bulky. I don't see the upsides compared to like just having a smaller one if the wind picks up. Anyway, I have the 2.5 POW. I have a 4 meter 777. I still have the 4 meter clouds from Takoon, but it's just for testing. And then I have a 5.4 from 777 and a 7.3 from 777.
And how do you decide which one you take with you when you go for a trip?
For a downwinder?
Yeah.
Well, it's so cool. These things are so small. Like compared to a wind wing, you just take everything. Yeah. Like flip, put it in the car. To take out though, I usually take, if the wind is around 20 knots, 25 knots, which is like normal wind for me when I go out, I take the 4 meter,
yeah,
which is nice. I take the 2.5 and I take a big one, a 5 meter or so. I put that in the North backpack because North has really good backpacks, or has a really good backpack. It's super small. The water gets out. So I take three Parawings with me when I go out. One going out with and two as backups. If I know that the wind is not going to like drop, I'm just going to take the small one with me. But yeah, I always have at least one backup Parawing with me. Yeah.
For sure. We go for a session when nice. The new POW is out.
Cool.
Maybe until then I have already my own board. Otherwise, I come back to your offer.
Absolutely, man.
And yeah, just bring all my demo Parawing and then also bring your friends and then we do a testing.
That would be super. That would be super fun. Actually, before we wrap it up, did we touch on everything, or is there anything you want or need to add? Because you talked about Levitas as well. Are you involved there as well?
Yes. Like my three main parts are Fly Surfer, Levitas, and Dropline.
Yeah.
I work closely with them together as like race service man. Sometimes I repair the foils, the bridles, the kites when necessary, also my bars and trim systems. And most of the time it doesn't really make sense that from every brand from this Olympic concept an engineer goes there to provide the service.
Yeah.
So it makes sense I'm anyway there for my bars. I can provide the service for Levitas, Surfer, and Dropline. And Levitas, it's really similar to Fly Surfer for me. They are from Austria, from Salzburg. They're also this kind of mentality like the Swiss, and it's really nice to work with them as they are also really reliable, and they also pursue to have the highest performance equipment possible. Yeah. And around half an hour from them is Robline. So I think with those three brands,
well connected, huh?
Yeah, really well connected. And for Robline, I also provide lines for the racing team with 10 members. They get some lines every year, and I'm responsible for splicing and sewing them. They provide me with raw materials, and they sponsor the athletes, and I'm the person who can do all the splicing job for them. And Levitas, they are really well known for their high performance racing foils.
Yeah.
They're also working for a few years now also on a Freeride setup and Freeride lineup. And I think soon they will also bring some really interesting things out. I could already test it, and I hope that you have also the chance to try them out.
I would love to. I love testing different foils. So that was super interesting. First of all, thank you very much for that flight before. That was really something I'd remember forever. It was super cool. It was super interesting to get to know you a little bit more. Know all your things that you're doing in the foiling industry, which is super cool. Maybe just for the audience as well, you told us how to find your shop. Maybe you can also share your Insta handle where people can contact you.
Yeah.
See amazing stuff.
That's SK Shapes all together.
At SK Shapes. All right. Very cool. All right. Then I think we're going to wrap it up. Thank you very much for everyone who's still listening. Yes, it's probably 1 hour and 20.
That's might fine. Be, in but, the beginning, I thought we have maybe half an hour, 45 minutes, because I don't really know what to say. But you asked some really interesting question, and my answer was quite long sometimes.
Yeah, but we could have like still went in deeper. Anyway, thank you very much for listening, for watching. If you like the show, please like rate it on Apple Podcasts or give it some amount of stars on Spotify. That would be super cool. And see you guys in the next one.
Bye.